be available for that person. Take the initiative to check in with that person.
Hi, I'm Carl Vaders, and welcome to the Church Lobby, Conversations on Faith and Ministry. My guest is Dr. Jeff Forey, and we'll be talking about grief, about recovery, and about how your church can use biblical principles to help people deal with their grief in healthy ways. Grief can take many forms, and if you're not ready to deal with it or to help people deal with it, it can be debilitating. Thankfully, this is one of those areas where the church, and small churches especially, can step up and step into people's lives in a way that provides real comfort. Dr. Forey and I will talk about some important aspects of grief and grief recovery, including why do we need help with grief? Can't people just deal with it on their own? What kind of damage can we experience if we don't deal with grief properly? What's a typical time frame for experiencing grief, and more? And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with an idea that I used as a pastor to follow up with people in grief after the initial shock had worn off and other people had moved on with their lives. Well, Dr. Jeff Forey, thank you so much for being in the Church Lobby today. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Now, you oversee a ministry called Grief Share, and we're going to be talking about that today. But before we even get to the specifics of your ministry, is it just me, or has there been a lot more conversation lately about the issues of grief, of burnout, and of these challenges that, I don't know, it seems like years ago, that there wasn't as much attention paid to it. I don't know if we were better at handling it. Maybe we just didn't have the tools. But is that something that you've noticed as well? Is there more conversation and more comfort in having conversations about things like grief and burnout and recovery and so on than maybe when you and I were younger?
Oh, I agree. There has been a lot more of those kinds of conversations. And I really do believe it's because those topics have finally received the attention that they deserve. I think in the past, there was much more of a reticence to talk about those kinds of issues. And for that reason, they just didn't occur in polite conversation. But in recent years, more people have been willing to talk about these things. And these topics have also been more a subject of research as well. Okay. And so that also helps to promote conversation, because now people are starting to be asked about those kinds of issues. And so that opens conversation.
Okay. I don't know if there's any research on this, but back in the day before we had this kind of research and the understanding of grief and sorrow and so on that we have today, do you think people were just not dealing with it back then? Or was there just more natural family and human and neighborhood connection, and those things kind of got dealt with in a little more automatic, organic way? Is it a mix of those two? Is there any objective research that gives us an answer to that?
Yeah, when it comes to grief, I think you're right. In years past, there was much more community connectedness among people who they didn't move as much as we do these days. And so relationships developed and grew over time with people who lived next to one another or nearby to one another for an extended period of time. And so it was a lot easier to talk about issues related to grief then. There's a much more ready-made support system in communities and in churches than there is today. Today, we move around a lot. And in moving around, there also tends to be less of reaching out to people. People in neighborhoods stick more to themselves than they have in years past. And that has made conversations as intimate as brief much less likely.
Yeah, that makes sense. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to define grief for us. But before we get to that, it feels to me, if you look at history, I think people before modern times probably dealt with the kind of severe grief that occurs to most of us when we hear the word, like death, war, famine. These kinds of things are far more common outside of the US and in previous years, even in the US, when we had a much higher infant mortality rate, when people didn't live as long. It was much more common, I think, for people then to experience like a death in the home, whereas today that's really removed from us. So here we are today, maybe even dealing with those kinds of grieving situations a little less often, but because of the lack of connectedness, maybe it hits us deeper or we don't deal with it as well. Is that part of what's happening here as well, you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, with the development of hospitals and other professional institutions, nursing homes and such, you're right. Fewer and fewer people have exposure to death. And public health policies have also helped to improve people's lives. So, again, death is less likely for people to encounter. And yet, it is interesting. In recent years, with the rise of palliative care and hospice care, there is now more trends toward people dying at home than there has been in the past, in the recent past, I should say, when hospitals were developing as a regular institution in communities. Now, with the state of our healthcare system, such as it is, with healthcare workers being so burdened with all the demands on their time, and with the desire for especially older people to want to be with their relatives and friends at home, dying at home is now again becoming more common.
Yeah, as you're saying it reminds me of when I was born. There was an era in American history where the dad was not in the room when the mom was giving birth, because there was an era where we felt, well, the doctors just know better. Dad, go out there and hand out cigars when this is done. And then we realized, wait a minute, actually having both parents in the room and understanding how this is, and even in a hospital setting now, we recognize the value of having family in and around for that. So I'm hoping maybe that we've begun to swing the pendulum back in the same way around grief and death and dying, where there's an understanding that actually, being around for it and familiarizing ourselves with it and not institutionalizing it is probably healthier in the long run for everybody. Which gets me to, I mentioned earlier that we do it. So can you help us? We've been talking about the word, but can you help us to define grief? Because my guess is it's something that we all think we know what it is, but we probably all have very different understandings of it.
I think that is an accurate statement. Grief is a whole person response to loss. Now, that loss could be, as we've been talking about, the death of a loved one. The loss could also be loss of a job. Loss of anything that is significant to the person can result in a grief response. And one thing that's, I think, important to understand about grief is that as a whole person response to loss, it has a number of different components that people might not immediately associate with it. I mean, we usually associate sadness with a loss of something significant or a person significant to us. And so sadness is certainly a key component of the typical grief experience. But there are other emotions that are associated with this whole person response to loss. There might be a numbness that somebody experiences. I remember talking with one individual named Dave after his wife died, and he told me, I was numb. He said, I didn't cry. I wasn't hysterical, but it seemed like I was in a different world. It was just so surreal. In addition, people often experience anger in their grief, anger at the deceased, anger at others associated with the death, perhaps blaming doctors, for example, or even anger at God. There might be anxiety and fear, where somebody becomes hypervigilant after the loss of a loved one, wondering who else might die. That's especially common with young children. But for young widows, the fear often is associated with, how am I going to provide for my children now? There might be regret or guilt associated with grief. If you had a difficult relationship with this particular person. The person was significant to you, but you didn't have an easy, caring relationship with that person, and there might be regret associated with that. Another element of grief that catches people off guard is what is often referred to as mental fog. You might experience an unrelenting flurry of thoughts, a restless mind that makes it difficult to concentrate and to stay focused on tasks. I remember talking with one individual. His name is Al. After his father died by suicide, he told me he would go to work, he would sit in front of his computer, and before he knew it, a whole hour had passed and he had done nothing. Time just flew by for him. Sometimes people get really absent-minded and forgetful. That can actually lead to some pretty humorous types of situations. I've talked to people, for example, men who realize after they've left the house going to work and they look down at their feet, they have two different shoes on. Or I talked with one woman who went to the grocery store, and after she was done putting her groceries in her car, she realized she didn't have her glasses. She looked all around, she couldn't see her glasses in the car. She went back in the store, retraced her steps in the store, and one of the clerks came up to her and said, "Ma'am, can I help you find something?" And she said, "Yeah, I'm looking for my glasses." And the clerk said, "Ma'am, you mean the ones on top of your head?" And she realized that that's what she had done with her glasses, but she had forgotten. There might be physical symptoms associated with grief, difficulty sleeping, difficulty eating. There might be increased muscular tension, and thus various body aches. There's this very commonly a tightness in the chest and the throat that people will experience. There might be difficulties with relationships as well, because people who know you well, if you're in grief, just might feel uncomfortable around you. They don't know what to say. Sometimes they do avoid you, unfortunately. And so that leads to a strain on relationships. So all of these are potential components of this experience of grief, and they're varied enough that it's not immediately obvious to everybody that what they're going through is quote unquote normal.
It's a whole person response as you're describing it. I mean, it really is whole person. There's not an aspect of our lives that can't be touched by grief, depending on the situation, depending on the person, depending on how they're navigating through it, depending on the kind of help and assistance they have as they go through it, depending on the seasons of the year. A lot of what you're talking about, this is actually the second conversation we've had recently about grief on the podcast. In episode 112, I talked with Leanne Friesen about her book, Grieving Room. And the big part of what she talked about it was providing room for people to experience all the things that you just referred to, from awkwardness to feeling stupid, to feeling sad, to feeling angry, to financial loss, to all the other things, and to feel guilty. So as we're dealing with grief, one of the things that because the main audience for this podcast is pastors and church leaders, specifically of smaller churches, which means most of even the lead pastors who are listening to us right now are going to be the main person who is from the church in the life of a person who's grieving. It's not going to be handed off to the counseling department in a smaller church. The lead pastor is going to be navigating through this themselves. So lead pastors aren't necessarily going to have the kind of training specifically in grief recovery that the head of a counseling department in a megachurch is going to have. So we need help from folks like you so that we can be ready for these eventualities and inevitabilities. There's no way we're going to go through pastoral ministry and not deal with grieving people. I mean, it's one of the primary things that pastors are called for is times of grief. As you just been describing this, and I've heard it before, and well, let me ask for your confirmation or editing of this. My guess is that there's no wrong way to grieve, but there are healthy and unhealthy ways to deal with what you're dealing with in grief. Is that a fairly accurate way to phrase that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are so many variables that affect a person's experience of grief that there can be a wide range of challenges that people have as they deal with the death of a loved one. You know, the nature of that relationship with the person who died is one big variable. Whether or not there are other stressors in your life is another variable. How you've learned to deal with stress in the past is a variable. And the kinds of adjustments you have to make now without that person being in your life is a variable. So, because there's so many different variables that affect our experience of grief, there isn't just one prescribed way that people should expect to experience grief. Even the same person will likely experience grief differently at different times in his or her life
Sure.
because you change as well.
The previous grief changed you, and now you're a different person the next time grief comes along.
That's right. That's
Yeah,
right.
that makes
Yes.
sense.
And so, but we don't often think about that. And so it can really catch us off guard if we're not aware of that, those dynamics.
Now, for people, again, small church pastors particularly, who are not trained in this especially, but who are going to be called into grief situations, one of the fears that I think a lot of pastors have in these situations is, okay, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to do the wrong thing. And so sometimes we maybe say too little, maybe we say too much. Is there a place between not dealing with it at all, saying the wrong thing, or talking too much? Is there any one of those three that's more dangerous than another, or how would you help us to navigate between those three concerns that a lot of us are going to face in these situations?
Well, I would say, first of all, we want to be careful not to downplay the significance of a person's grief and not to give cliched, trite responses. Well, he's better off. He's no longer suffering. You know, those kinds of reactions don't actually address the individual in front of you. And so those kinds of responses are not helpful.
And a lot of the time when I've seen it, it feels to me like a deflection mechanism from the person who says it because they're not really wanting to deal with the grief. They're not wanting to lean into it and they're not wanting to acknowledge it. They're just wanting to kind of make it go away. So it's like, there's more fish in the sea. At least you got two other kids or right. These kinds of things that when you hear them as a third party, I mean, I've at times I've physically stepped back when I've heard some of those things because they've been so jarringly inappropriate in times of grief. But it feels like that person is, they're trying to say the right thing, but they're also just wanting to get out of the situation, it seems. And it seems to me like being present and listening is probably better than if you can't figure out what to say, just hang around and say nothing. That's kind of been my go-to, but.
Being present is really important. In fact, it's sometimes referred to as the ministry of presence. I remember talking with one young woman after she had had yet another miscarriage. She was in a very dark place, and she called a friend of hers to come over. Her friend arrived and just stayed with her the entire day while this woman's husband was at work. And she told me, I'll never forget that just having her here made a difference. We didn't talk. She didn't have to feel like she had to talk, have to talk. And she said, that's what made this such an important thing for me that day. She talked about the ministry of presence that that friend fulfilled for her. And the reason that is so helpful is because everybody knows you can't change the situation when somebody has died. That's very clear. So to try to make the griever feel better in the moment, it's not going to be well received, and it's not necessary.
It's
But
not healthy.
no, your presence with that person, available to talk if the griever wants to talk, or simply to sit there and to remind the griever that he or she doesn't have to go through this alone, is very important. Another component of ministry in these times could be doing helpful tasks around the house or maybe doing some yard work, offering to do things that will be helpful to that person. That person might not think immediately of all the things that need to be done. So asking, what can I do for you, might not get you a clear response. But if you're there and you can see things that could be done, offer to help out in those ways.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I mean, the tendency for people to say, let me know if I can help. And then, of course, they're not going to let you know. They're not going to call you up the next day and say, can you pick up my laundry for me? That's not going to happen. But like you're saying, if you are present, if you are there with them and you see the situation and go, hey, dinner needs to be cleaned up. I'm going to do that for you while you stay and you talk with the friends who have shown up to comfort you, rather than let me know if I can help. Actually offering a specific thing, or actually just stepping in and doing something, depending on how close you are to the person and how appropriate that is, given whatever, friendship or intimacy you have with them. One question, though, that I want to ask about is, we've been so far talking about some of the immediate stages of grief right after a death or a loss of a loved one or a divorce, whatever the grief may be about. But is there a time frame by which we can expect someone who's grieving in a healthy way? Obviously, there's no end date, there's no specific time, but is there kind of a time range that we can look at it and go, hey, it could go on this long or it could end this quickly, so that we who are trying to help people can go, man, that seemed a little too fast. Like, are you really dealing with it? Or, man, it's been how long and you should be over this by now. I don't even have a way of gauging what an appropriate time frame would be. Is there even, are there even healthy time frames that we should be aware of?
Well, there is no typical time frame for grief. Usually, when people ask this kind of question, they have in mind, when will this initial intense experience of grief let up? And although there's no typical time frame that we can give, because there are so many variables that affect people's experience of grief, I would say, if you find over a period of, let's say, a year, that your life really isn't moving forward, and you find yourself just overwhelmed with thoughts about the person who has died, and you're not able to make productive adjustments in your life without that person, then counseling certainly is warranted. And the reason I suggested a year time frame is because after the death of a loved one, you will go through a period of time when you will experience the regular routines of life that you had been experiencing, but now without that person. And so there are a lot of first-time experiences without that individual that had been significant in the past: birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, vacations that were typically taken. When you go through, especially the first year, without that loved one being present, there will be, these waves of more intense grief at those times, sometimes leading up to those significant days, sometimes immediately after. It varies there. But you can expect these waves of grief to come, especially in the first year. But certainly, if you find that your life is at a standstill and you really can't move forward, then professional help is certainly warranted. And when I say life at a standstill, here are some of the things that you might look out for: avoidance of reminders of the deceased person. Now, I don't want to go in that person's room. I don't want to see pictures of that person, that kind of thing. Ongoing and unrelenting yearning for that person. You can't stop thinking about that person. There might be bitterness associated with that as well. If you're isolating from people, or if there's no desire to plan for the future, or to pursue interests that you have had, or if life just feels meaningless, those are clear indicators that life has come to a standstill for you. And professional help really is needed for get you work through that.
And I would imagine suicidal thoughts, thoughts of attempts at self-harm, those kinds of things obviously would be huge red flags that this is
Absolutely.
not being dealt with in a healthy way and you're going to need some help. We've been talking so far about the pastors and those who are in positions where we are expected to step up. But for Christians who are going to a church, for a lot of those situations, the pastor is going to be there, hopefully, and is going to be help in the grieving process, hopefully. But probably there's going to be more time spent with fellow Christians, just average regular folks in the church. So, what advice and ideas would you give for the average congregation member who's trying to help a friend, a fellow believer who's experiencing grief or has gone through grief? How do we walk alongside them in some healthy ways?
Sure. I would say be available for that person. Take the initiative to check in with that person. Call the individual and ask, how are you doing today? Or what have you struggled with today? And just talk about whatever the person has to say in response to a question like that. If you visit with the person, look for ways in which you can be helpful to that person, as we talked about earlier, offer to do various chores. And I would suggest those kinds of offers should extend for an extended period of time, not just a couple of weeks after the death, but I'm talking several weeks, even months after the death, checking in on the person, offering to do stuff for the person. Now, obviously, the griever will eventually have to assume those responsibilities again. And so one way that might be handled is at some point after doing these chores for the individual, you might ask for help. And the two of you do them together. It gives you an opportunity for fellowship, and also gives you an opportunity to see how well this individual is doing with this chore. If it's a chore that the person hasn't done in the past, because let's say a deceased spouse has done it, you might be able to figure out, okay, this is something that this individual might try to find somebody else to do for them. Or I know how I need to help this person figure out how to do this chore on his own or her own.
Yeah. Now, part of the reason I'm talking with you particularly today is because I became aware of the ministry that you oversee called GriefShare at griefshare.org. And you offer tools there for grief recovery. Can you walk us through what is GriefShare and how does it help churches and pastors walk with people through these kinds of situations?
Absolutely. GriefShare is a ministry to people who've lost a loved one to death. And it is a 13-week program. And typically, the way it's worked is that a group of individuals from a church oversee this ministry. They offer these 13 weeks where there's a meeting that occurs once a week, typically for a couple of hours or so. And in during those meetings, the participants get to know one another. They get to watch a 30-minute video in which experts and people who've gone through grief share their experiences and share some tips on how to deal with the various facets of grief that we've mentioned, loneliness, sadness, anger, anxiety, those kinds of issues. And then there's also at these meetings an opportunity to have small group discussions in which the participants reflect on what they've seen in the video, what they thought was helpful, how that might relate to their own experiences. And then that also tends to stimulate conversation between participants and saying, oh, well, yeah, I experienced something like that. And what I found helpful was, and so this kind of ministry then starts to snowball over a period of those 13 meetings that occur. And there are also supplementary resources associated with the main curriculum that help people go deeper into either their particular losses or the particular challenges that they have had in their experience with grief. And if somebody is interested in locating a GriefShare group, they can go to the website griefshare.org and click on the tab on the page, find a group. And then that will take them to a page where they can supply their zip code and a radius, a distance from that zip code that a person would be willing to travel. And then the churches that offer GriefShare groups will come up on a list for that person. And also, There are online grief share groups as well, so you don't have the
Okay.
geography limitation there.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question when you were mentioning zip codes, was is there opportunity for those who are even outside the US so
Oh,
online
yes.
options would be available? Good.
Yeah, there is, absolutely. And one of the things that we have found is that Grief Share is a phenomenal outreach ministry tool. And we've designed Grief Share to be an outreach ministry tool as well. We want people to experience the hope that's available in a relationship with Jesus Christ, for sure. And that is shared with people in the program. But we designed it in such a way that we help people, first of all, understand the compassion of our Lord, and then eventually they will be exposed to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so this has been a phenomenal outreach tool. We regularly hear from leaders telling us that the participants in their groups are mostly from the community around the church and individuals who have not gone to church. But when you're experiencing the grief associated with the loss of a significant person, that raises a whole lot of huge questions
Yeah.
that people are willing to come to the church to ask those questions. And Grief Share is a program designed to try to answer some of those questions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially in a smaller congregation. A pastor may be going, okay, I don't know anybody right now who's dealing with that. And how am I going to start a group? Or if I've just got one person who just lost somebody, I've got maybe one or two people. How do we start a group for that? But it really is an outreach and ministry to the community. There are people around you, no question, even in the smallest community and the smallest congregation. You've got a lot of people around you who have experienced, who are experiencing grief, and who don't know where to go to find it. And they're going to go online and they're going to Google, grief recovery or something like that. And so if you're registered with Grief Share and you're doing it through that one, you get the help for it from people that you can trust, who have a biblical viewpoint on it and who have the professional experience to help you with it. Two, you're going to be on that list of groups that people are going to be looking for. So you have an opportunity to really help people that otherwise may never find what you have to offer. What a great way to be able to bless the community. But here's a challenge that I'm immediately hearing in my invisible ears as a small church pastor. Love the idea, want to help the community. I can see how we have the physical space in our building to even provide that for the community, but the small church pastor is already overwhelmed. A lot of them are already bivocational. And this isn't just adding an appointment to their week. This is adding something that has emotional weight to it. And a lot of pastors are looking at that and going, I just can't right now. Is there a way that a church can step up and do this that doesn't overwhelm the pastor with even one more thing to add to their load?
Absolutely. And in fact, we designed Grief Share with leader training materials so that lay people in the church can be the ones leading the groups.
Okay.
So we have leader training materials that we have created for leaders. And we recommend that there be multiple individuals being involved in leading the ministry just because of all the different situations that people experience in life. It's better and easier to have more than one person involved. But in addition to those leader training materials, we also provide ministry coaches. And this is a free service to grief share groups where leaders might experience some kind of challenge promoting their group or in the midst of conducting these meetings. There might be challenges that come up that they are not quite sure how to respond to. Well, we have a team of ministry coaches that can be emailed or called, and they will help walk leaders through those kinds of challenges that they might have. And if they have a theological or counseling related issue that they're not quite sure how to respond to, they refer them to me. And I interact with those people. So we have various levels of leader support so that anyone who has a heart for ministering to grieving people will have the tools that they need in order to share the the hope that we have in Christ.
Terrific. Is this available just in English or are there other languages available?
It's also available in Spanish.
Oh, terrific. And this will be in the show notes, of course, griefshare.org. We'll put the link in the show notes to that so that you can get all of the information there. Is there a way that they can go there and just see a few things and maybe get some introductory videos to get a clearer understanding of what it is before they jump all the way in?
Yeah, there are samples, clips from the videos that they can see.
Terrific, terrific. Well, thank you so much for this. I do encourage pastors to check this out. I think it's a vital thing. This is one of those areas where people who aren't necessarily even interested in the church during a time of grief are probably going to be more open to help from a spiritual source than they might otherwise be. In fact, is there, in your experience, are there particular types of spiritual questions that people tend to ask when they're in a place of grief? Is that something we can even prepare for, or is it just all over the board?
Oh, well, no, there are some very common types of questions, and I generally categorize these questions under why, the why
Okay.
questions, which can come in a variety of different forms. Why did the Lord allow this tragedy? Why didn't God answer my prayers? Why does the Lord feel so distant from me? You know, those are the most common types of questions, spiritual questions. Sometimes, you know, what's it like in heaven? What's my loved one experiencing? Will I see my loved one in the future? I mean, and these are the types of questions that are addressed in various sessions in Grief Share.
Okay, I can feel the relief of people as you describe that. Oh, those questions, there's actually help to answer those questions. I can feel people being relieved already because those are tough ones to deal with, but they are important. And if we can offer some assistance in that to people, we can really be a blessing to them at a time of such great need. So that's links again to all of this will be in the show notes. But let's go to the lightning round to finish up our time together. And we've got four questions for you, Dr. Forey. Question number one is this: what are the biggest changes you've seen in your field of ministry in the last few years, and how have you adapted to them?
Actually, the biggest change has been the growth in secular professionals talking about grief and loss. And the reason I mention that as a challenge is because of the secular perspective, they start to think about or talk about grief and death in ways that are just horizontal, you know, based
Okay, yeah.
on what people experience. And that makes it more challenging then to help people broaden their perspective, the perspective that we have in the scriptures from our Lord, who helps us to understand these matters in a different way. So that has been a challenge. But one thing that I have done in response is to start where people are and say, okay, let's talk about what you've heard or the questions that you have. And then I will try to lead them in, and as I respond to their concerns or questions, I introduce a biblical perspective as I start from where they are and take them in the direction that I think the scriptures would have them go.
Great. So an openness to that. That's wonderful to hear that there's an openness to that because there are fewer and fewer open doors for spiritual conversations in our culture today, or so it seems. But there are some of them that are opening, and that's one of them. Second question is this: what free resource, like an app or a website, has helped you lately that you would recommend for small church ministry?
Well, in addition to churchinitiative.org, which is the ministry host for grief share and divorce care, I've also often been helped by the resources available through the Christian Counseling and Educational Foundation, CCEF.org, and a ministry outside of Philadelphia. There's also helpful resources on the Biblical Counseling Coalition's website.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. We'll put those in the show notes. What's the best piece of ministry advice you've ever received?
Best piece of ministry advice: listen. I have tended to be the sort of person who likes to give answers, and certainly giving direction, giving advice is a very important part of ministry. Because you're trying to help people think about their lives, from a biblical perspective, which they often do not have, but to be reminded of how important it is to listen, asking people enough questions to get them to articulate what's on their heart, the concerns they have, the questions they have, the reservations or hesitations that they have. All of that is so critically important because all that helps to shape how you give helpful biblical advice to people.
That may be the first one-word answer to that question in over 100 interviews, but if you're going to pick just one word, it's hard to imagine a better single word than listen as ministry advice. Absolutely. And fourth and finally, what's the funniest or weirdest thing you've ever seen in church?
The first thing that comes to my mind are some of the mishaps that I have seen surrounding baptisms,
Oh, yeah.
where individuals who are very leery about being immersed to begin with, but really committed to making such a statement of faith, they agree to baptism, but then put the pastor through quite an ordeal, grabbing a hold of him, sometimes actually bringing him down with him. I guess the pastor gets rebaptized.
Yeah, there's something about dunking a fully grown adult in the water during an emotional experience in front of all their family and friends that's just ripe for something to go wrong. The first baptism I ever did as a very, very young pastor, I started dunking them from the middle of the baptismal tank rather than from the far end. And there wasn't enough room from the middle to dunk them all the way under, and I hit her head against the side. Yeah, it was one of those. Do I keep going or do I and make sure she gets completely covered and wet, or do I stop now and tend to the obvious look of shock? Thankfully, she wasn't really hurt, but she was quite surprised. She didn't expect that. So after that one, I learned walk them all the way to one end and dump them toward the other end. But the first one, nobody told me that in advance. So anyway, if anybody wants to follow up with you, certainly to get more help about grief share. Or, as you mentioned already, through Church Initiative, you have divorce care as well. What's the best way to get in touch?
They can get in touch with me at J Forey, that's JFORREY, at churchinitiative.org. They can just indicate that they heard me on your show in the subject line, and I can respond.
Terrific. I really encourage pastors, churches. Even smaller churches that don't have pastors but are lay-led, this is a great way to be able to help not just your own congregation members, to offer a ministry to your community. There are people around you who are grieving. There are people among you who are grieving. And to be able to help them to process that in a healthy and biblical way is a real blessing to them that can also impact people for eternity, as well as helping them with the grief that they're experiencing here and now. So thank you so much for this advice, for the ministry, and for the time today, Dr. Forey. I appreciate it very, very, very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a pleasure.
As Dr. Forey mentioned, there's no real time frame for dealing with grief, but there is a season when people are in the first throes of it, and during that time, they can often be overwhelmed with people who want to help, even if those people don't know how to help. So here's a pastoral tip that has helped me help others over the years. It's good to write down the date of the death of their loved one on your calendar, along with the date of the funeral. Then mark a time about 3 months out, and at anniversaries and birthdays and holidays, including the 1 year anniversary of their passing, so that you can reach out again at these difficult seasons. These can be especially hard times for those who are grieving, but they're often not remembered by other people. So pastoral care at those times can go a long way toward their overall healing and long-term recovery. Also, take the time to check out the resources at griefshare.org. This may be the next great way that you and your church can serve the members of your neighborhood at a time when they need it the most. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders, and I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby.